Beyond the Dark on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Let's speak to Daryl Jones, who is... In fact, you're the first person I've spoke to who's edited a book. Now, they are, Daryl, you're the first one.
Well, it's got to be the first time for everything, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, it's a collected ghost stories.
That's right.
Explain what this is all about.
Okay, they're the collected stories, the collected ghost stories of M.R. James. And James was a Victorian and Edwardian writer and scholar who was a university professor. But as it were, by night, and especially at Christmas, he wrote ghost stories to amuse himself and to amuse his friends and colleagues and students. And rather, I think, to his surprise, his ghost stories were a tremendous success, and they became a sort of Christmas ritual. Ghost stories are often told at Christmas from the time of Dickens onwards. You know, the nights are short, or rather the nights are long, the days are short. Darkness surrounds us, we need warmth, we need to gather around a fire, and we listen to scary stories. And so ever since Dickens, really, ghost stories had become a Christmas tradition, and he wrote these ghost stories, and rather to his surprise, they became very successful.
So why did you get involved, and how did you find out about it, and are you into this sort of thing?
I think I am into this sort of thing, yes. Well, I'm a university teacher myself, so in some ways I'm just doing the same kinds of things that M.R. James himself did. What I'm very interested in is supernatural fiction, and horror film. And, you know, to be honest, it all started, I think, back in the late 70s or early 1980s when my parents got a video recorder for the first time, and my mother wanted to watch horror films. And there were all these films that she really wanted to see, like The Exorcist and The Texas Chainsaw Massacre and the like. And my father wouldn't watch them with her. He had no intention of watching them with her. So I ended up watching them with her as this kind of 12-year-old boy. And I think it was the best piece of parenting she ever did, because in some ways I've made a career out of it.
Daryl, you watched The Chainsaw Massacre at 12 years old.
I did.
Oh,
I did.
My.
But I know, but I promise you, I'm a completely normal...
She could be done for child cruelty.
I wouldn't think so. But she was a midwife, so I think she was used to gore.
So, your fascination, how did you find out about M.R. James?
I've always known about him, really. When I was a child, once again, through the 70s and into the 80s, his stories were frequently televised at Christmas. The BBC did a ghost story at Christmas every year from about 1968 onwards. Jonathan Miller did a famous version of one of James's most famous ghost stories called Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad, with Michael Horden. And this was televised in 1968. And from then on, all across the 70s, there was a regular ghost story for Christmas. As a matter of fact, they did it again last Christmas Eve. John Hurt was in another adaptation of a James story last Christmas Eve. So in some ways, I kind of grew up with them, and they were always around me.
So you never thought as a child you would finish up doing what you're doing now?
No, I had absolutely no idea, I don't think. No, I didn't think when I went away to university that you were allowed to do these kinds of things. You know, that there was my serious self who read Jane Austen and Shakespeare and George Eliot, etc. And then there was my unofficial self who was reading ghost stories and horror stories and watching horror films. And I had no idea that one day I'd be able to let my unofficial self get paid for all of this and do it for a living.
Now, how do you go about doing this? How do you go about being an editor? How do you have to go to somebody with the idea, or were you approached?
In this particular case, I was approached, though you can go to people with the idea. I mean, Oxford University Press got in touch with me. I've written a number of books on horror fiction and the supernatural, for example, got in touch with me and asked me whether I'd be interested in doing it, and I jumped at the chance. And then I spent 2 or 3 years then travelling around libraries looking at manuscripts. These are the kinds of ghost stories that very often take place, as ghost stories tend to, I think, in old libraries or old houses and old collections of manuscripts and forbidden found documents and mysterious manuscripts and that kind. So basically, I spent a couple of years doing that. I travelled around to Cambridge and around East Anglia, through France, on the trail of... I was ghost hunting, I suppose.
So you believe?
No, I don't think that I do, really. I have an open mind about it. If you'd asked me this question 3 or 4 years ago before I started this, I would have said, absolutely, I do not believe. But now I have an open mind about it. I mean, our Victorian forebears, who were by no means stupid, and many, many more intelligent people than I have given great credence to at least the possibility of a supernatural world or a spirit world. Or another world. You know, we tend to think that we inhabit the world of matter, the material world, and some of us believe in the spirit world and some of us don't. But, you know, for our Victorian forebears, there was no real difference between the world of matter and the world of spirit. And, you know, there was simply a veil between the two worlds, but they cohabited very, very straightforwardly in some ways. So if you think of, for example, A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, there's a moment where Ebenezer Scrooge looks out of the window and suddenly the veil has been lifted and he sees that London is a city full of ghosts. There are ghosts all around him. And many Victorians believed this. So, you know, who am I to say that they were wrong?
Since you were 12, have you ever had an experience that you have not been able to explain?
I've wondered about this myself. I can honestly say that I don't think that I have. Not in the sense of seeing visions or apparitions. I mean, I think we've all experienced forms of kind of uncanny behavior, kinds of precognition, the sense that we've been here before or we knew this was going to happen. Something which puts us slightly outside of ourselves, even as something as simple as deja vu, but often things a little more complex than that. And I've certainly experienced that sort of thing. But if you've asked me whether I've seen a spirit or a ghost, I can honestly say that I haven't, no.
Now, as you know, this is this feature is called Beyond the Dark. We're talking about collected ghost stories. It's early hours of the morning. I wonder if we can persuade you to tell us one of the stories, Daryl.
I will try. In some ways, this is in the telling. So I think what your listeners would have to imagine is that this is Christmas Eve and that we are sitting in the study of a Cambridge professor at around 11 o'clock, probably drinking port or brandy, smoking our pipes, that darkness is around us. It's the darkest night of the year. And we're waiting with a sense of expectation for something to happen. And then from the door opens and from one of the rooms comes the provost of King's College Cambridge carrying a manuscript. All of the candles are blown out but one. And by the light of the fire and by the light of the one candle, he starts to read. And the story will always begin with a phrase such as, how the story that I am about to read to you found its way into my hands is a matter for another day. And then the story would be a story of a scholar who finds himself in a far away remote inn, perhaps in a foreign country, where he finds himself walking around a remote town, looking into an old church or cathedral, which is habited only by a very nervous-seeming verger, who asks him whether he would be interested in looking at a manuscript, and gives him a book and says, "Take it. I don't want it. Take it with you." And he finds himself back in his inn at midnight in his room, smoking his pipe and leafing through this manuscript, which contains priceless documents of the kind that no one has ever seen before. Ancient fragments of the Bible, things that, and at the very end, he sees a picture of, which looks like a biblical scene, of someone like King Solomon, commanding or taming a demon, and the demon is indistinct, but all he can see is that it's something hairy and malevolent that looks like a human version of one of the awful bird-catching spiders of South America, in other words, a human tarantula. And as he's reading this, he sees something just out of the corner of his eye, and there on the table next to him, he thinks, well, what is that? Is it a rat? Is it a spider? I can't see. And then he looks, and it's a hand, a clawed hand. And as he looks above himself and screams, he sees the other clawed hand appearing over his head and runs and screams and sees this malevolent, beastly demon looking at him with yellow eyes of hate and runs out of the room. And that's the end of the story. And did you see it? Did you not? You don't know. I mean, this is the thing about supernatural tales, that when we, you know, it's best not to give too much away, the sense of whether or not that thing was real.
Darryl Jones has just given you a flavour of a book called Collected Ghost Stories, which he's edited. When you edit a book, is it difficult to do?
In this case, it's difficult in the sense that it's challenging, but it's also rewarding. M.R. James, the ghost story writer whose work I was editing, was, as I've said, was an academic, was a scholar. And much of his work is suffused in his own scholarly interests and background, his interest in medieval theology, his interest in church history and architecture. So that there's a lot of tracking down of obscure references and quotations, books which may or may not exist. And so, you know, my life is made much easier since the invention of the internet, I have to say. But, you know, you spend a long time tracking down these kinds of references. You spend a long time tracking down his own manuscripts. You spend a long time trying to decipher the illegible handwriting. You know, it's quite something, I think, to see stories you've been familiar with for many years, but they're written in their original form on foolscap paper in, you know, pen and ink handwriting. And then you think, crikey, how can I can't read this handwriting. So, you know, you spend a lot of time habituating yourself to reading handwriting, to finding out arcane bits of knowledge. And, you know, in some ways, it's an act of ghost hunting in itself. You're digging up and trying to recover the past, and you don't always find what you think you want.
How many stories are in the book?
34.
Wow.
Yeah, written from about the 1890s to about, he died in 1936, so written across the, you know, the very late Victorian and Edwardian periods and into the 20s.
Is there one in there that's really frightening?
I think his most frightening and his most famous story is the one called "Oh, Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad," and it's the one which keeps getting remade and re-anthologized, and it's often described as the most frightening ghost story in English. It might be one of the most famous ghost stories in English as well. And he is a genuinely terrifying writer, and sometimes things as simple as, in this case, a bedsheet coming to life next to you on the bed can be, well, I imagine it would be pretty terrifying.
Absolutely. Have you ever been scared witless?
Yes, I have been scared witless on a number of occasions. I've been scared witless by reading books. I've been scared witless by watching films. Well, yes, I have indeed. Yeah. But as I said earlier, I mean, I've never had, and I suppose I'm rather glad I've never had the kind of sort of earth-shattering supernatural experience that's made me completely question where I am and what I'm doing. It allows me to keep a bit of distance from it, because I think as an editor and as a scholar oneself, you know, you have to have a certain amount of distance from your subject.
Darryl, did you feel as if you got to know him while you were doing it?
I did feel as if I got to know him very well, as a matter of fact. You know, you do, I think, living quite closely with somebody's work and ideas for a number of years, you do feel like you get to know him. And he was an old-fashioned man. He was a Victorian man, and he was a man whose many of whose ideas had no place, I think, in the modern world. He had great problems with women, for example. I'm not sure he altogether knew what women were for. He was one of these gentleman scholars, so the stories all take place within this surrounding of you know, groups of men. So I think, you know, his attitudes towards women, his attitudes towards the poor and the working class are things that I certainly would not share. But you know, as a man of his time, I think, you know, you understand and sympathize that this is a man who really is at sea sometimes in the modern world. And the modern world, modernity is it's frightening, it's terrifying. You know, this is a guy who lived through the First World War as a university teacher in Cambridge University, and saw generations of his students wiped out and killed. And, you know, it's no wonder that he thought that, you know, the modern world was terrifying, and the modern world was something he needed to escape from.
When you were doing this, did you ever sense he was there, his presence?
In some ways, I think I did, yes. Yeah. There were times when I found myself looking through manuscripts, looking through old papers, and you'd happen upon, you know, either the very thing you were looking for, or the thing that you didn't expect to find and that nobody had found before, and all of a sudden there it was, and, you know, it was a new fragment of a story, or it was a letter that no one had really paid much attention to before, or a photograph. I think, well, you know, I wonder how I found that. And I was thinking, you know, well, I wonder if he's there at my shoulder, sort of pointing things out. So there were times when I did think, in some strange way, that this was a kind of collaborative effort and that I was collaborating with the ghost.
Well, I never thought I'd say that quite this early, but I'll say it now, and you're the first one I've said it to. This would make a great Christmas present.
It would, as a matter of fact, yeah. Yeah, and I, you know, I think that ghost stories are a very important part of our Christmas tradition now. And so it'll be out in bookstores just in time for Christmas, as a matter of fact. And I think it would make a great Christmas present. We all like being scared at Christmas. And I think there's something, I think, also about the kind of safety of being at home at Christmas, for example. You know, not necessarily around the fire, but, you know, at home with one's family. So you're in this atmosphere of safety, and this allows you to be, you know, to have a kind of pleasurable scare.
Have you got the bug now? Are you going to do another one?
Oh, I'm working on a book of horror stories at the moment.
Oh, right. Yeah, so we've got another interview due.
Oh, come back to me in a couple of years, and I'll be able to talk to you about mad doctors and cannibalism and implements of torture.
Daryl Jones, what's the book called?
It's called The Collected Ghost Stories of M.R. James.
What a nice man you are. Thank you, Daryl.
It's a great pleasure.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show, Late Night City, with Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.